And you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show. I just wanted to mention, the because we get a few texts on the excess deaths, and some claims have been going around saying that in 2024 there's 2,700 excess deaths, and why aren't you talking about that? So I'm going to go by the CSO figures, the official figures that records and accounts for deaths, because that's the... Might be, Caroline. But sorry, I'll double check that in a second. But I'm in the right link. I think you've sent other people the wrong link, is what the issue is. Right, sorry, it's back to this more serious matter here of the excess deaths. So there are claims going around on social media that there's 2,697 excess deaths in 2024. But so far, just to run through the figures, 2020, 13,127. 2021, 13,028. 2022, 12,951. 2023, 12,934. Not until now, 12,827. The population, because of an aging population, the deaths per year are supposed to statistically be 700 ahead of the year before, because people are getting older. But that's not happening here. So deaths so far for 2024 actually are well below what's expected in any given year. Now, that's not for me to get involved in an argument about excess deaths. I'm just giving you the official CSO statistics as it relates to that. Now, you might dispute them, and that's fine, but that's what the official statistics tell us. Glad to hear Paul talking earlier about this. The other driver caused a collision in our case, yet the person taken to hospital was tested and the other person was given a lift onto their destination. We felt the same frustration, and when we complained about it, nothing happened. Great to hear you mention the diamond in Donegal Town and the bikers. I think a discussion is needed on this subject. Well, we've been having it this morning. This is the platform. This is the discussion. This is the town square. Any further comment on that? More than welcome to the show. Hi, Greg. This is an interesting one because I don't know where this is coming from. Hi, I'm Greg. I'm disappointed with your negativity towards electric cars. I have an electric car for over 2 years and it is the safest car I've ever driven, with lane assist, impact warnings, tiredness warnings, speed warnings, keep your hands on the steering wheels alert. Most collisions happen with driver error, not the fault of the car. Electric cars are the way forward. That comes in from Cahill from Letterkenny. Well, Cahill, I drove electric vehicles for a number of years and I'm driving currently one that effectively is an electric car. I have no issues with electric vehicles. What I do have, though, is a problem with the poor electric car infrastructure. But no, I think electric cars are great, personally speaking. Let me see. We're joined on the programme now by Brendan Devaney. Hi, Brendan.
Greg, yeah. Keeping your hands on the steering wheel, that's always good advice in a car, yeah.
Unless you're in a Tesla.
Keep your hands on the steering wheel. Yeah, good advice.
I agree. You don't need the car to tell you that. I have no idea what we're talking about because I haven't been given any notes, but they're always quite fleeting in any case. I know you like the hurling, and I know you like to see how things are progressing here in a county perspective, but big game at the weekend too, big hurling game. Did you watch? Did you enjoy?
I only seen the second game now, Greg. I didn't see the first game. I was at a wedding on Friday, which rolls into a wedding on a Saturday, you know, so... It was the couch yesterday, and I was glad of the hurling to give me a wee bit of a pep up because I was struggling.
Yeah, indeed. And come here, just before we talk about tonight's show, and it's kind of looking forward to next week, of course, Donegal ladies had an important win at the weekend as well.
Yeah, certainly. Just that's the staving off the relegation, Greg. So, yeah, important stuff for the ladies. It's a season of rebuild, as we know, but they probably went further in terms of the what was the whole counties and maybe their own estimations of what could have been in the season. So great signs, Greg, for this team going into next year. And well done to John Minotti and all involved, because, you know, Donegal had such a run of absolute stars of players there, and that all has to always come to an end, and it always takes a while to rebuild, but they certainly speeded that up this season with some brilliant performances. Ulster final, of course, a draw with Kerry in the championship.
Yeah, listen, excitement's building now ahead of next weekend, and the DL debate is out of the studio. You're broadcasting live from Highland Motors, not too far away, so you can just run a mic cable run a mic cable over there. You've got John Gilday on the show, Ja Fallon too, from a Galway perspective as well, Neil Loughran of the Irish News. Right, we're sort of getting into build-up territory now, Brendan. It's going to be a huge game, isn't it?
Oh, listen, Greg, semi-finals, there's not too many come this way in Donegal, even though for all those years we were so brilliant in Ulster, and you know, you'd have to say that for 10 years the best team in Ulster, we didn't see that many semi-finals compared with Ulster ones. Obviously, from years gone by, that would have automatically put you into it, but with the change in nature of championship, you know, it was a different route, and, you know, it's the first semi since 2014, and it's no coincidence that was Jim's last year, and this is his first, and we're back again. So, yeah, it's exciting, Greg. It's very hard this year for championship. I think there's been so much questions about, you know, the form of teams and players and the condensed championship and the group phases. There's so many questions around it. It's very hard to understand exactly the consistencies of teams. Now, probably Donegal's one of the few in there that have been really consistent throughout, except for probably you'd say the Cork game. And for this Galway side, and they've been very up and down. There's tons of injuries in the mix, so they've been very hard to predict. And the reason I think some people were so surprised at their victory over Dublin was because it was the previous game against Monaghan, when Monaghan were having a really poor season, went down and really put it up to them. And McBennett had to underside the bar for Monaghan with about 10 to go, would have put them one up. It could have been a very different story. So that said, from 2022... Galway very easily could have been All-Ireland champions, and all those players are still there. The thing is, a lot of them were a bit walking wounded, but once they had them all on the pitch, and particularly at Croke Park, this Galway side is a team absolutely packed with talent and ability, and that came to the fore against Dublin, and I guess that's the warning. That's why I think they're going into this game slight favourites over Donegal.
So, given the nature of the pitch at Croke Park and the type of play that it can encourage and accommodate, do you think that favours Galway over Donegal?
I don't think so, Rick. I think our players are completely adept at playing at Croke Park, because we have so many players can beat people, drop the shoulder and take people on, which ends up being, you know, probably one of the biggest aspects of any team at the minute. And that's how we destroyed Louth. It was just by people being able to beat their opposite number. And I think that's probably a warning for Galway. But that said, Galway have... You know, you're up three or four notches versus Louth in terms of their forward play and their ability. And how we judge with that, I mean, the way, you know, the last day Mark Kern was left out of the squad and we went with a full attacking team, basically, with Conor O'Donnell coming on a corner forward for a corner back. I think that might change around this game, because particularly with, you know, Comer and you know, Finnerty, Walsh, Tierney, you know, Conroy, there's so many players out there that have ability that we can't afford to not be marked or tied down, particularly in our inside line. I think Galway will look to leave two inside a lot of the time, so they'll have to be marked by out-and-out defenders. So I think Donegal will have to change their style from Louth. But listen, they're well adapted to doing that. It'll be a completely different game. So I guess if you're looking at the performance of Galway against Dublin, that's a very different proposition. If you look at them from the previous game to Galway, you think, or Monaghan, you think we beat them. So it's just hard to get a read on teams where they're at, Greg. But you'll see a very different performance, I think, tactically from Donegal from the Louth one.
Yeah, both teams can score. Both teams can claw back, you know, 4 or 5 point deficits. It should be tight. It should ebb and flow.
Yeah, and goals, Greg. I suppose you're looking at goals. Galway have only conceded one in the whole championship, which is phenomenal stuff. I mean, we in only one game we conceded three. I suppose that Cork game, which was maybe a bit of a wake up. So we're not conceding the Miller. So it's very interesting how, you know, even though we're playing supposedly with so many forwards, we're not conceding goals. It's because when we get into our shape, we're still able to stop people getting in around the house for a 3 point score. Now people say against Louth, it was too easy for them to kick over the bar, but I just think that game, we played it in terms of, I think we could go and hurt them when we needed to, and we knew we had there with a measure of them, so we didn't need to completely lock down our defence. I think that'll be different against this Galway team. That said, like, you're very, even, you know, you're on about teams, players, I mean, Walsh, for example, that is so talked about, has had a terrible season. You know, the game before, he went off injured against Monaghan, and Barry Joyce more or less says it didn't matter because he wasn't doing anything. And then he comes and has that 7-point performance against Dublin. So there's, I suppose, the warnings in there. There's different players stepping up in different days, and we do that as well. So you're just looking for, I suppose, our whole team to have a certain level. Mm. And then if you look at the performance of the likes of Patter Mogan the last day in particular, and Ryan McHugh and some of the midfield play then of Langan and big Keelan McGonigal coming from midfield. And of course, Jason McGee's a big question mark, Greg, just whether he can play in this game. And you know, when Louth squeezed us up, we were in trouble with our kick out, which Galway's definitely going to look at and do. And that they have huge midfield power out there. So without Patton being able to hit Jason McGee, that was a big, I suppose, warning shot for us the last day against Louth.
Yeah, and I mean, you talk about form going into the games and trying to read form, and of course, you know, that I think you could probably explain the court result from a Donegal perspective if you wanted to. You just get the sense that these guys, as individuals, but also as a team, they must feel somewhat bulletproof, not to the point of arrogance and taking anyone for granted, but the confidence has to be high, both individually what most of them have achieved, but also collectively as a team when the going gets tough.
Yeah, and I suppose that's going back to what Jim and his team there are instilling in them. You look at the energy there against Louth, and people are talking about the season and about Ulster and what it takes out of you. And obviously, we had to beat, you know, Derry, Tyrone and Armagh to go all the way, extra time, and two of them and that. The people are saying, how would that take out of this Donegal team? Now, I know we had the week break because we topped the group, Greg, but Donegal looked so fresh against Louth. It was remarkable. It just seemed to be constant running all over the pitch. And it was a strange enough game how open it was, Greg. And I'm hoping this game is as exciting end to end. But maybe from our own perspective, we got to be careful because this Galway team has a lot more ability about it than Louth. So how we play it will have to be, I think, a wee bit more tactically shrewder, but it still is set up for a brilliant match.
So in a game like that, Jim McGuinness starts a certain way, a little bit like, you know, a boxing match where the two fighters sort of, you know, they feel each other out. You know, a few jabs, don't overcommit because you're not going to get a knockout. Jim McGuinness will start off a little bit like that, but he'll have a point, won't he, in his mind where he'll be able to instruct the players to adapt, to adjust. That's what we seem to be able to do now.
Yeah, and that's a key, Greg. You hit the nail on the head there. The modern football has to adapt to every situation. It used to be a thing, Greg, where if I found myself out past the 45, I'm like, what am I doing out here? Now you have Oisin Gallen down making dispossessions on our own 13-yard line. Like, it's just players are just everywhere all the time. And the work that the lads have to be in, fitness-wise, you know, and I know Anthony McFadden's in the back doing S&C there. Listen, the fitness levels of the lads to get up and down, and then be composed in. And if you look at, say, Patter Mogan the last day, he was like superhuman. He was taking off, and then he was clipping the ball over from ridiculous angles and that. So I think that's the key. Whether Donegal go cagey or not, Greg, I often think, be prepared. You know, you look at I always look back to the game against Tyrone at Balbuffet. The first ball was recycled, one given to Daryl Boyle. Normally, as you said there, Greg, we go back and build. He went straight at Tyrone, up that flank, and again, I thought, wow, here we go. Donegal aren't going to keep ball here. They're going after him. So I think sometimes different teams might plan to do things, and then people take it on their own chest to say, here, I'm just going to attack the play here. And I think the teams that attack, Greg, are the teams that succeed, particularly when we get to Croke Park. If you look at Derry the last day, sitting in, you know, it was a horrible game with Kerry, but you just got the feeling eventually Kerry will break them down and you lose the match. So I think the key is, I think we all these teams, they have to outscore. And we look at the magic 20-point mark. If you want to be in playing against a big team, you're going to aim for that.
And we're not far off it. We're not far off it in all the games. It's just
we're just a point below Galway and the likes of Kerry and that. And I think, as I say, even Derry sucked Kerry into a really defensive, dour game, but they still got beat. So a bit like what they played against Dublin, that tactic, they'd be better off going for Kerry because they weren't going to punch enough holes. And later on, when the game opens up then, the better team will usually wear you down.
I think Jim McGuinness gets that, though, because we talked about over the years, Brandon, where I think really what you're effectively saying, if we're going to get beaten, let's go out in our sword. rather than employ negative defensive tactics that are puke to watch and you're going to get beaten anyway. But I think the Jim McGuinness factor is going to avoid that for us. Also, I mean, listen, that's mouthwatering because of our interest in it. But the second semi-final, Armagh versus Kerry, in and of itself, chucks up a million scenarios and stories as well. I know you're going to be focusing on one side of the draw, not ignoring the other, but that in itself is also another fascinating game on the fantastic pitch that's Croke Park.
Yeah, indeed, Greg. And really hard to know how to call that there because, again, Armagh have been so up and down in terms of their season. And people keep saying about Kerry, who have they played? But they've done what they've needed to do in every game. And certainly with the Dubs gone now, everybody in Kerry is thinking, right, time to take this title again. You know, they're obviously we're always the standard bearers and very much Dublin have taken that perch over this last 10 to 12 years. So I think for them now, they'll be thinking, right, we're better than the other three sides that's in it. You know, let's beat Armagh and get the final. But I think this Armagh team again, Greg, if they go for it, they have the power and the ability inside. You know, Mernon, Turbitt, Connolly, you know, all of them are ball winners. Creeley now is midfield partnership with Big Grimley, allowing Rian O'Neill to play and sweep around. And if you look at Kerry, you know, the likes of Clifford and Sean O'Shea and him, they're not shooting the lights out anymore. And they're playing quite a tactical game and they're getting through games. But they haven't had, I think, Armagh will be their biggest test so far. They came up with the goods against Derby. I think Armagh offer a lot more going forward. They have a great bench as well. So, yeah, another fascinating.
I think we're looking at an All-Ulster final. I'm just saying it there. You know, I think that's what we're looking for. It's written in the stars. So this evening shows live from Highland Motors at the Mountaintop here in Letterkenny. John Goulday is there. We're going to be hearing from All-Ireland winner, Galway All-Ireland winner, Jaa Fallon, and Neil Loughran, two of the Irish News. A great panel of guests, and I'm sure much more than that as well. Brendan, as always, thank you very much indeed. You've no weddings on next weekend.
No, definitely. I'll have the voice ready next week.
Tell you, you've landed on your feet there, didn't you? 2 days weddings this weekend and clear next weekend.
Well done, Megan and Steve. Great timing. Yeah, he was a Dub. He had a bit of touch. He was a Dub, actually. A big Dub fan, so we were having a bit of laugh with him. It was unusual for him to be out at this time and us to be in, but anyway.
I love the way you say we had a bit of laugh in inverted commas. I'm not sure you'd have been laughing too much. All right. Take care, Brendan. Thanks so very much indeed, Brendan Devenny. The DL Debate live for you after the 7 o'clock news this evening. A caller says climate change is harsh extremities, harsher winters, warmer summers. We, as in the Western world, are doing the most. China, India, Russia are the biggest polluters in the world, yet nothing is happening to them. Just think we shouldn't be penalised as heavy when we're only a fraction compared to the Eastern countries. Certainly a point of view there. Hi, Greg. I work in a great job, which I love, but for no reason in particular recently, it's become a highly toxic environment, which is slowly killing me. I work with a lot of young people. I spend so much of my day dealing with their mental health issues, and I really wonder if parents know about their behaviour or where did it become so acceptable to use anxiety and mental health as an excuse to talk with such disrespect and refuse to do a job you're paid to do. They seem to have developed an attitude that they come to work and I should be grateful for it. The fact that they are paid to do their job has become almost irrelevant. I do worry for the future of our world with this behaviour. Am I the only one facing this at the minute? I don't know. Let's throw it out there to the listeners. They're working with young people. I think there's a sort of a sense of entitlement there, is it? And if there's something that they don't like, they might cite anxiety or mental health as an excuse to talk with disrespect and refuse to do the job they're paid for. Let us know if that's something that resonates with you. 086 60 25,000. I also looked at a car in a garage and went home to think about it. The salesman called me later that evening and I gave him €500 of a deposit over the phone. The next morning I changed my mind. Until date, they've refused to give me back the deposit, despite no signed agreement. Plus, every sale's allowed 17 to 14 days of a cooling off period. Bottom line is, if they're taking the cash and it's against the law. This is off the back of a listener earlier on that contacted us to say that their a relation had put a deposit down on a car. They went to go and get a loan for that car. The loan fell through effectively, so the deal couldn't go through. Now, they didn't state in that text whether the garage refused to give the deposit back. Maybe it happened sort of over the weekend and they want to know. They are refusing to give it back, are they? Wow, okay. And is it a big garage or It is. Is it something we're pursuing? We're going to check in with them. Right, they're refusing to give it back. I just don't see how that is good business. Give it back and say, look, at when you get a loan, come back and we'll look after you. I don't understand the logic there. Hi, Greg. Going to a funeral. A bought ticket for parking at 10 to 10 to last an hour, but only saying till 11:32. That can't be right. I got ticket at top of Church Lane. Thanks. That must be in Letterkenny. Right, okay. Let me see. Is it because the half hour is free? I don't know. 10 to 10. No, that doesn't work out either. It's 42 minutes. I don't know what the reason for that is. Anyone else spotted that? Let me know. Hi, Greg. Nice to see Harlan get a mention on RTE last week. Is it RT? What is RT? RTOAP, where young people move in with OAPs for a while to see if it can be long-term. The pensioner asked Alexa to play Highland Radio, proceeded to dance around to country music. This was Tala in Dublin. Also, Nathan Carter was on Living with Lucy. He said it was Highland Radio that played his records when he started. Great to see you getting a bit of credit. That comes in from Cahill Flood. Thanks, Cahill. It was our late, great one and only Peel McCann, I think, that was one of the first two to spot Nathan Carter's potential. I was in a collision a number of years ago. The person drove into me and then drove on. I followed the car and called the Gardaí and he was stopped. It was clear to me the other person had been drinking, but like your caller, I was the one breathalyzed and the driver who drove on wasn't. That particularly doesn't make sense, because I presume you were able to say to the guards, look, they came at me, they've caused the damage. You need to check what the story is with them. All right, that's very interesting indeed. Right, okay, we're going to take a very short break. And after that, we're going to go to Monday Focus. Our guest is Dr. Ibn Joseph. And we're going to talk to Dr. Joseph about Ireland, as Ireland's special rapporteur on the government's plans to tackle racism in the country. We're going to speak effectively about that issue. So stay with us. Now, the government has announced Dr. Ibn Joseph as special rapporteur for the National Plan Against Racism, which was published over a year ago. Dr. Joseph is a Nigerian-Irish lecturer who founded the first Black Studies University model in Ireland. And Dr. Joseph is with us now. Good morning to you and thank you so much for your time. Good morning. You might just unmute for me, Doctor, if that's okay. I want to be able to hear you.
I forgot I was on mute.
How long have we been using Zoom, Doctor? Come on.
Oh, you know, it's part of it. Unmute yourself. So that's part of the fun of Zoom. You keep hearing, unmute yourself. You're on mute, you know. And we wish in real life we could just, you know, okay, just stay on mute for a bit.
But it's great because it gives us the remote access to you, which is very useful. Congratulations on your appointment, a special rapporteur for the National Plan Against Racism. Talk to me about this plan. Are we working through it at the moment? Do we have it established what it is? Do we know the work that we need to be that needs to be done? Besides the obvious, Doctor.
No, we do. I mean, like, you know, the work was done. Thank you so much for inviting me to your station today. And so again, this work was done, you know, from, I think, was it 2020 when they were commissioned. So a group of people were commissioned and was headed by the professor from UCC. And she worked with people from diverse groups, travelers, you know, people from different communities. They all worked together and they came up with a plan for Ireland. And, you know, so this National Action Plan is actually a government-led initiative to first acknowledge, you know, that yes, you know, the impact of racism, but also to actively address it. So that's the good thing about the plan, that it is actually government-led. And that's one of the things we've been asking for this to be from top down. You know, all the work I've been doing has been from bottom up. So it's been really difficult. But so if we can actually get the government, you know, to take ownership and to lead by example. So that's what it is. Mm-hmm. You know, in 2001, the nations came up, you know, it was called the Durban Declaration in the World Conference in 2001. And they agreed, you know, and member states, you know, signed up. So it's not just Ireland that signed up. Member states signed up. A lot of member states have actually started doing things about the plan. And so we just, you know, coming on board now. So it is a positive thing for us as a nation.
I want to talk to you a little later about the impact of racism? Because I think really there's this sense that it's just feelings, you know, but obviously it can have a far greater impact on that. Not that feelings in and of itself is not enough, but the ramifications of it. But I want to just establish where we believe we are in this country. I've spoken to people from different backgrounds, different parts of the world that have been here for, you know, 20, 30 years. Their children are Irish born and reared children. And for some of them, they're actually starting to experience racism for the first time. And their children too, it's having to be explained to them why all of a sudden it feels like they're being told to go back home or whatever else might be said. Is that just one or two examples of I'm talking of, or are we going backwards in terms of race relations in this country, Dr. Joseph?
It is really sad, you know, because I was speaking with someone, was it yesterday or 2 days ago? And he was just saying, oh, you've been here like 22 years. Wow, you know, blah, blah, blah. I said, you know, and she said that. So they wanted to know if it was getting worse. I said, actually, when I first came to Ireland, even while there were not as many people of color or people, you know, diversity in the space, but there was an openness to, you know, both from the government and from the people. You know, there was an openness to learn, you know, to for that integration. We were even thinking about names. We were talking about recognition and all of those things. So we were on that pathway. But, you know, what happened was 2007, 2008, 2009, when the recession came, infighting began and everything started going down. You know, we lost, you know, the national plan. You know, we lost a lot of things. So the funding to that department began to go. The minister, dedicated minister, left. You know, so a lot of things began to happen. So, and I think, I think we went backward. I think we definitely went backward because there were things, you know, I had access to, you know, and I could do, you know, that just changed now. So we went backward. Now, you might be surprised because you say, but there are more people of color or there are more travelers, you know, in educational spaces. But there's also more harm being caused. People are saying things that they would not have said openly. Yes,
but people feel empowered to say what they think because it's my thoughts. And but like, obviously, we want to get to a point whereby we treat each other wherever we are and wherever we're from fairly. But what like, we are already, Ireland is already a diverse multicultural country, right? People sort of, this, you would almost think the conversation is that we're in the process of change when there's people from all different backgrounds, people of color living here for many generations. Do we not have enough understanding of each other? Do we mix enough? I don't know. I'm trying to figure out how the penny hasn't dropped that lots of different people live here already. You know what I mean? And that's the case. What do we need to be doing that we don't fear each other, we understand each other more, we respect each other, we don't feel threatened by each other? That's where I think we really need to be working at, rather than dealing with the cut or the illness, sort of maybe sort of treat it before we get there. And I wonder, are we doing enough?
We're definitely not doing enough. And you know, it's so good that you're saying that because, you know, like, I'm like, I almost want to say, you know, we are never going to go back to the island where everybody is white. It's never going to happen again. Never. Because now we have mixed race children, you know, that for them, you can't split them into, okay, this is the black part of you, this is the white part. It's not going to happen. So we have mixed race children. And I'm not just saying they're born now. I don't know if you know Jude, but Jude, he's 82 years young, you know, but he was born in Ireland. He's mixed race, but he's 82. He was born in Ireland. So what are you going to say to him? What would you ask him to go to? South Africa? Nigeria? This is home. He has kids.
But we're at the point now, too. We're at the point now, too, though, whereby there are a group of people in this country now. And I think, as we saw from the elections, maybe it's slightly over-amplified, the extremities in relation to this. But they'd be quite unapologetic on social media. They'd say, send Jude home. Send Jude home. We need to roll back the clock. If it's 100 years, we have to go back. Let's roll it back because this is a land of Celts. We're all white with red hair and all that kind of stuff, right? So, but I don't think that's the majority. I think, you know, there's extremes in one end to the other. But I think I think the majority of people sort of in the centre don't really think that way.
No.
I don't think so.
Honestly, like if you follow my page, so if you follow my LinkedIn and you follow my Twitter, you will see a divergent group there. So you will see a group who are like, oh my God, this is amazing. And this is amazing. And then you see another group who are saying, killer, send her back home. She's a racism Caesar and blah de blah, So there's all of that. But honestly, like you say, there's the majority of the people don't think that. And that is the good thing. And we have to learn to develop a thick skin and understand that almost, I get for me, it's like looking at, like you said, it's like the bell curve, 25% of the people will, balk. But our hope is that we can reduce it from 25%. It's still a high percentage to have against, so we hope that Ireland will be able to, as a society, we can do a whole lot more.
I think
I
it's
think
quite
we need to go
interesting.
back.
I beg your pardon. Sorry, doctor. I was going to say, I
No,
think
no,
it's
it's
quite
fine.
interesting how you timeline it in that as we approach the recession, things sort of went south, and we're going through a period now where things are somewhat going south. And I think really it's not necessarily that all of a sudden people are scared or fearful or dislike people that might not look the same as them. I think when the society feels unfair, that people can't get in to see a doctor, that people are struggling to get a dental appointment, that the hospital is overcrowding, we have a tendency rather than sort of looking towards those that are in power and making the decisions, to sort of blame other people who we think are sort of taking those services from us. So it's almost like a symptom, I think, of how the country's getting on and how the general public feel. And I think often the anger can be directed in the wrong direction.
And I think it's two ways. So one, yes, there is that, that things are going wrong and we're blaming. So it's easier to blame the people of migrant descent. It's easier to blame them, and the government is not also doing anything to counter that because it's easy enough to do. All you need to do is to show the data and show the statistics, and hopefully those are some of the things we can also do as well. You can show the data and actually show that actually the percentage of those people in our hospitals, they are not the ones of occupying the hospital beds. In 2004, they said, oh, let's stop, that, Ireland was, a lot of women were having babies here, and it stopped. But our hospital beds are still, we still don't have hospital beds. Do you understand? We still don't have hospital space. So it's not that. It's not immigrants who are taking the housing spaces. We're just not building enough, our housing system. It's a system with a problem with the system. So not the people of migrant descent. Actually, do you know that if you look at the funds that people of migrant descent do bring in here, for example, international students, we pay 4,000, 3,000, to go to school here. As an international student, they pay 54,000 for 1 year. 1 year. They pay almost 10 times what we pay as citizens. So even from our education system, it's being supported by international fees. We export to these countries. Do you understand? In Africa, one of the major exports from Ireland is to Nigeria. We have over 200 million people in Nigeria. So one export to Nigeria alone, it is massive. So we make a lot of money from exporting to a country like Nigeria. So some of that exchange is not being learned. Do you understand? That actually people are bringing things here.
Yeah, but you see,
People
as
are.
well as that too, Dr. Joseph, I mean, I'm hearing you, but why is it lots of people are, this message is only being articulated to them now? Like, I think one of the greatest errors that this government or any government seemingly has is communicating with the people relating such information. They have got thousands of former journalists, many of them working in communications, and I wonder, well, what are they all doing? Because in terms of communicating, liaising and helping people to understand, that is completely absent. And in that vacuum there are others that are prepared to step in. But I that's the one thing I don't understand, is why some of the conversation that you're articulating, why do we not hear that information from official sources, in inverted commas? And I know you're official source, but I hope you understand the tone
I
of the
do
question.
Understand, and I'm totally with you there. I'm totally with you there. And I did, I think I said that on my 6-1 interview, and it was taken out of context, and I had a 200 person follower who took me on X, saying that I'm saying I want to educate, I want to train Ireland, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, no, we need to inform people, give people, correct information so we can make, informed decisions. And this kind of information is not out there. And that's what I'm saying, that it is there. Even citizenship alone, if you know the kind of the amount of money that we make as a nation with the citizenships we grant, we make money from that. We make, it's part of our income. You know, so it's talking about that. I was saying, joking, I was like, if everybody of migrant descent were to just say, you know what, this is a no-work day for us. That all of us, the Nigerian, the Chinese, the Indian, of Indian descent, whether you were born here or not, whether one, your half-parent or not was Irish or not, we all just say, you know what, today we're just going to take a sunny day, find a sunny day in Ireland and not go to work. There'll be utter chaos.
I think we can...
And that is not being communicated enough.
Yeah, I think also, listen, I'm not being all woke on this, by the way, because we get lots of diverse opinions on this program, by the way. Yeah. But there's a tone of this conversation because of your appointment and what have you. But, people need to sort of... Again, this comes down to communication as to What is a danger in this country, right? What should people be scared of? What's a threat to our children? What's a threat to our women? We got found ourselves in a situation whereby a lot of the commentary on social media is that migrant men are a huge danger, but we then ignore a lot of the sort of Irish assaults, to the point whereby we had the soldier Crotty effectively saying, well, it's not his fault. She came up and had a go at him. So we actually mitigate and make excuses for the white guy. Now, I think the truth is somewhere in between. Do you know what I mean? But people need to we really need to think for themselves. And I think the government has a job to do in terms of educating, not to tell people what to think, but to give people information, because the information simply does not lie. And if there is a peak or if there is a trend, then we have to sort that out, right? You know what I mean?
And just in that, when there was a time, I think, when we had the last riots, I was a little bit upset then because it put fear in everybody. Parents won't let their kids go out. Your kids go out and you're on the phone. It caused a lot of unrest, and not just among migrant families, but among people that, for them, these kids were born here. This is their home. Now their parents are monitoring, where are you? You need to come back home, So all of that. So we are curtailing their youthfulness. We are not even allowing them to be that. And I said, look, and one of the things the government said was that, we're going to put more guardi on the street. I'm saying, that's not the solution. Yes, we don't mind more guardi on the street, but when you're saying we're going to put more guardi on the street, it's as if you're actually saying, yes, these people are criminals, they are rapists, and they are that. What we needed to do was to say, let's look at the statistics. The data is there. Let's look at the costs, the percentage of people that come in, from migrant descent who have cause harm to our women and our children. And then let's compare with the percentage, of, native Irish who have caused harm. So if the percentage, even if it is one must be, I'm not saying that one is too small, one must be prosecuted and, right? But so that we can put the problem within context, because it is blown out of context, and so that people can make informed decision that, yes, it is a threat, but the threat is minimal. We can manage it. We can, do you understand? We can get the culprit and put them in jail if we need to, But if we blow it out of proportion and make it look like, then we endanger, more people, and all of that. It was easy enough to do. They could have just done analysis of data to look at the percentage of, people of migrant descent who have committed crime in Ireland compared to our native, if effect against women, abuse within the home, all of those things. It's easy enough to do. It's just data.
Jimmy's got a quick point. Hi, Jimmy.
Hi, Greg. How are you?
Not too bad, Jimmy.
Just listening to your program there.
Yeah, please, appreciate that.
Yeah, I'm just curious, referring back to the aspect of the waiting lists and beds in hospitals, it's my understanding that in the last 5-6 years, we've allowed in roughly probably 150,000 various people, immigrants, whatever, Ukrainians, et cetera, and we have, if I'm not to be mistaken, given them all medical cards, and... we haven't built any more hospitals. Where do we get these extra beds from? I'm sure 50% of those people are availing of the facilities now.
But Jimmy,
just
a weak question to you, and this is not being argumentative at all, but if you think back 10 years ago, do you think there was no waiting lists in hospitals or what have you? Or do you think this is a new thing that's happened?
No, this is not new. I personally was on a waiting list for 6 years Thankfully, there wasn't too much wrong with me, and eventually I did get seen to, and at that stage I needed the treatment okay. Yeah. But no, we've always had waiting lists. I don't understand how people can go to France and Spain and these places and there isn't any waiting lists. What's wrong with our system? Do we need two more hospitals or something like that? I don't know.
Yeah, well,
I'm just wondering what the doctor would suggest.
I'm not sure. Dr. Joseph is a medical doctor. No, that's fine. It's just still has an opinion. It's just interesting in that the Letterkenny University Hospital is literally crying out for more beds,
that's right,
ED, and they have been doing for years. Thanks very much for that, Jimmy. The question, Joseph, the question is simple. Dr. Joseph, you know, how do we progress? We haven't built any more hospitals. I think Jimmy's been quite conservative in the 150,000 population growth.
And I think the key thing is that, you know, that this 150,000, they are not all in the hospital. So, for example, my two boys, I don't think I've ever had to take them to the hospital for anything. Only once when one ate a fish, he's 20 now, he ate fish and a bone got stuck in his throat. And I had to say, oh, my God. That's the only time I think I ever took him to the hospital. Oh, yes, and he was playing basketball and he hurt his finger. Do you understand? 20 years old, I've only taken him to the hospital twice. The day he was born once and two times a bone. And do you understand? So it makes it look like migrants are just sleeping in. It's our system that is broken. Our hospital system, we need to find a system that is more effective. So what I used to work in the Royal College of Surgeons. So what that we need to have, you know, they have what they call physician associates, you know. So physician associates, like in the United States, they've trained more physician associates. You know, they do everything a doctor does. The only thing is that they don't, you know, prescribe, mm-hmm. you know. So they can actually take a number of people can actually pass through, you know, physician associates if we train more. You know, it's the way we are operating. Another thing, and this is a pet hate for me, because we keep complaining, no beds, no doctors, blah, blah, blah. Do you know, in Ireland, we train, most of our Irish doctors are trained. They all emigrate to, you know, America. They go to Canada, Australia, because, you know, they pay them a little bit more there and their training is a shorter time. But the people from, you know, from the continent that comes here to train, we then don't give them permits to stay here and work. You know, I'm like, it's a no-brainer. We've trained them for 5 years. They've paid international fees. Give them, you know, permit them to stay, and they give you 6 years of their labor. Uh-huh. Do you know what I mean?
Okay.
You know, so there are ways to go around those things that, you know, we just need to sit down and work.
What do you say to...
But it's not migrants clogging up the beds.
Dr. Joseph, what do you say to people who... And they wouldn't be classed as racist, but they would be of the view that they say they're living in the community. They can't get a house. You know, their children have no prospect of being able to get a house. They can't rent. And they're saying, look, we don't mind people coming to this country, but we should first look after the Irish first, right? Now, that Irish person could be your two sons, right? You know, even though they're young people of color. But my point is how do you counter that? Or is there any counter to it? I'll read the text as it's sent in. It's kind of ironic because presumably they're not listening to hear the answer. I had to turn Highland off once again. Are you going to give us an even playing field and accept that us locals have to put up with racism too? I believe in live and let live, but I resent the way Irish people are being treated in their own country.
Look, okay, let me say one thing, right? And just in case, you know, people, you know, he's listening or somebody else is listening who has the same thought. See, think about it, that these laws that people of migrant descent are part of in Ireland, for example, social welfare, housing, not laws that were set up, apart from direct provision, these are not laws that were set up for migrants. They were laws that were set up for Irish people. They were not set up for people of migrant descent. They were set up for Irish people. And so any law, anything that benefits a person of migrant descent to be able to get on a housing list also benefits a native Irish person to get on a housing list. The only difference is... if you are in direct provision. And direct provision, honestly, you don't want your kids there. You don't want to be there. They're like 12 people in one room, 8 people in one room, and they're living on 26 euros or 29 euros. Do you understand? So So there's not, this is not a new law that was set up for them. It is the same thing. Don't forget that a lot of people, I used to work in 2020, I was working four jobs, raising two boys on my own as a single parent. And then on top of four jobs, I was also doing voluntary work, running organization, doing voluntary work, appearing in things, all of these. As one person, I was writing, trying to maintain my career, you understand? You know, so I don't get free house. But you might see me living in a house, but I had to do four jobs to pay for the house I'm living in.
Okay.
When you see that, just don't forget that sometimes people are actually working to pay for. They are doctors, they are care assistants. You see them working in shops. And so many of them can afford to pay their own rent. They are paying the same high rent as you as well.
Okay. Listen, thank you very much for your time. I do appreciate it. Have a lovely day. That is Dr. Eben Joseph there. Now, we would have a lot of messages and a lot of comments, and we've heard from them and spoke to them of people who expressed the views that, you know, the hospitals are overcrowded, there's no school places, they can't get a bus space for their child, but others can, that, you know, people are being looked after, other people are being looked after whilst they're struggling and can't make ends meet, and that their children are being forced to emigrate because other people have taken their jobs and all that type of stuff. And that's heard a lot. Dr. Joseph there is perhaps talking from the other perspective, and also really, I think, talking about the fact that we need to talk and get somewhere done. So that's the flip side of it. Okay, there's an awful lot of stuff that said that Dr. Joseph would disagree with. So the balance is somewhere there in between.